Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman.
There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't been informed that your planet is about to be demolished to make way for a hyperspace bypass. My name is Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for a gentle half hour of polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. This week, I'm delighted to welcome you into an extraordinary location for the tea lair, the rather splendid library housed within the Nautilus. I do hope you didn't feel sick whilst being transported from the mainland in Captain Nemo's longboat. If you did, perhaps the sight of thousands of books, neatly displayed in these beautiful bookcases decorated with copper, will settle your stomach. Do come and sit down. There's plenty of room on this gloriously comfortable couch. I did consider taking tea in the salon. There are some fabulous works of art in there. But that clamshell fountain is rather noisy, and the captain didn't want any tea to be spilt on his organ. I did explain that I have only the most civilized guests, but I don't think the poor chap has the greatest faith in humanity, even the better-behaved portion of it.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived, Miss Lauren Bucas.
Ah, marvellous. Let's see her calling card. Miss Lauren Bucas, Story Wrangler, Cape of Storms, The Colonies.
I've sailed around the Cape of Storms, ma'am.
Oh, really? What was it like?
Rather inclement, ma'am.
The motif on the card is interesting. A lasso in gold leaf. It looks like it's crackling with lightning. A little reminiscent of Wonder Woman, methinks.
I met Wonder Woman once, ma'am.
Oh, don't be silly, Latimer. Show Lauren in. For those of you who don't know, Lauren Bucas is the author of Moxieland, the Arthur C. Clarke Award-winning novel Zoo City, and more recently, The Shining Girls, a novel about a time-travelling serial killer.
Ms. Lauren Bucas, ma'am.
Hello, Lauren. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I am fending off a terrible cold, but apart from that, I'm pretty good.
Oh, dear. Well, would you care for some tea? That may help.
I think tea always helps in these kinds of circumstances, although I do have to be very careful of spilling. I have a way of spilling liquids all over whatever is in sight, so I will have to be very, very extra super careful.
Oh, yes. The captain is a rather formidable fellow. I'm sure he wouldn't appreciate it. How do you take your tea?
Well, I prefer rooibos, which is a South African specialty, and the correct way to drink it is with honey and lemon, or sugar, but no milk, please.
Ah, wonderful. And honey and lemon would be good for the cold as well, of course.
Exactly. And maybe you should add, like, you know, I don't know, a dash of scotch in there as well.
Oh, I like your style. Would you like to have an Eccles cake?
I do not know what an Eccles cake is, but as long as it is not made of some kind of dead marine life, that sounds wonderful.
It most definitely isn't. We took great care to bring our own cakes. The captain does have some rather strange tastes in food, and the cake choices here were rather lacking. Eccles cake is a northern speciality in England, and it's made of dried fruits and spices kind of pressed together and then wrapped in flaky pastry, which is quite buttery, and then there's a little bit of sugar sprinkled on the top.
That sounds pretty good. I will definitely have a piece of that, please.
Lovely. So, in my letter, I invited you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
I have brought my discombobulator ray.
A discombobulator ray?
It's a very special, beautiful antique handed down to me through the generations. It is very good for confusing people, or discombobulating people. And it's a very beautiful steampunk-ish piece of gold with brass edging, lots of kind of curlicues. It's very ornate, very beautiful. And I think that's part of the discombobulation, is that people spend so much time looking at the actual instrument that they get distracted, and you can use that as your opportune moment to fire it at them.
Goodness me, you'd better keep that out of sight of the captain. I think he'd have that away in moments.
It is a very handy device.
Yes, though I don't think you would need to use it on me, because I spend a rather large proportion of my life feeling very discombobulated, so... Or perhaps I've already been zapped and I didn't even realise.
I fear that long-term exposure to the weapon, it has a certain radioactive field, and I fear that that would explain a lot about me.
Ah, yes. Well, let's put that to one side, just so that there isn't any risk of accidental discombobulation, because that would be rather embarrassing.
We only want intentional discombobulation.
Absolutely. Now, I'm very, very aware of the fact that you've been interviewed about 11 billion times in the last few months. So I've actually arranged something with the dear captain. I have some things that I'd like to ask you whilst we take tea together, and I've taken a moment to write each one on a piece of paper. But first, I'm going to ask you one question, and if your answer matches something I've already written down, I'll put that piece of paper into a special torpedo that's been prepared, and we'll eject it from the Nautilus with extreme prejudice.
Perfect.
Excellent. So the question is, which question are you thoroughly sick of being asked?
How to pronounce my name.
Well, luckily enough, that isn't on one of these pieces of paper, so hooray!
Hooray!
No need for the torpedo!
Aww, torpedoes are fun!
Well, perhaps we can fire one off later just for the hell of it.
Excellent.
So, my first non-torpedo-worthy question is that because of these interviews, we know a great deal about your books and so forth already. But I was wondering if there's something you've never had an opportunity to mention in an interview. Perhaps, I don't know, an obscure hobby or a bizarre party trick that you might like to confess over cake?
I don't know if I have any good party tricks apart from spilling things on myself. You know, I have a very embarrassing confession, actually, which is that for some time I required a drinking coach. Because one of my best friends, Dale Halverson, a.k.a. Joey Hi-Fi, who's my award-winning cover designer, bussed me at my birthday party pouring shooters for everyone else. And they were supposed to be vodka shots. And he noticed that my vodka shot had bubbles in it because I had poured myself a shot of Sprite. Because I didn't want to drink, and thereafter he appointed himself as my drinking coach. And I'd like to say that I've now built up the fortitude to be able to actually handle alcohol stronger than soft drink.
Well, that's not only something we didn't know about you, but also about Joey Hi-Fi as well.
Exactly. He's a man of many talents.
I was going to say, he's such a talented chap. You've been travelling all over the world recently. I was wondering who would be your ideal travelling companion, and they can be real or fictional, and why?
I would like someone with a teleporter, please, because I am really, really, really sick of long flights. South Africa is so far away from absolutely everything. So, yeah, I mean, Doctor Who would be great.
Yes, it's true. I think he's probably the top of most people's lists, really.
I know, definitely. But really, I just want him for his TARDIS. You know, I would really just be using him for the TARDIS.
Mm. Yes, we don't want you for your conversation. We want you for your TARDIS, sir. Now, I have a memory of a blog post. Well, I hope it's a real memory. I don't know. I read so many things online. It was something that was online a year or two ago, perhaps even longer because I'm having suffered discombobulation for some time now. I lose track of time very easily. But I have this memory of you mentioning that when you signed the deal for the Shining Girls, you were really excited about being able to support a particular charity as a result. Have I remembered that correctly? And if so, which charity was it?
It was a charity called Rape Crisis in South Africa. They operate out of Cape Town. And rape is a absolutely horrific epidemic in South Africa, and we're getting onto a very, very depressing subject matter, but it was really amazing to be able to, you know, I chucked a small amount of money at them, but now I'm involved in the Shining Girls charity art auction that I put together especially for Rape Crisis, and I'm hoping to raise 50,000 rand for them, which is probably about £5,000 or thereabouts.
Wow, fantastic.
And what we've done is we've ripped pages out of the book and given them to artists to customize. And they can do anything they want with them. You know, hopefully they'll do an original, really cool kick-ass piece of work, but if they just want to put their coffee cup down on top of it and sign their name, that's also okay. And we're staging that art exhibition as part of the Open Book Festival in September, and all the works will be selling for 1,000 rand each, which is really amazing because it gives people the opportunity to buy an original work by some of their favorite artists for a really, really cheap price. And I've already had, like, serious hardcore dealers, like, emailing me saying, I would like to pre-purchase these 10 artists, please. And I'm like, no, you can rock up at the door like everyone else. Sorry for you.
Excellent. That sounds fabulous.
It's really cool. You know, I think I feel very passionately about violence and violence against women in particular, and it's nice to be able to give back in the real world as well. As you know, obviously you hope your fiction will have an impact in some way, and you know, hearts and minds and all that stuff. But it's also nice to get beyond hearts and minds into, you know, kind of the corporeal realm. And I've done a charity art show around all of my a charity art project around all of my books. With Zoo City, we had vinyl toys that we got five different artists to customize in some way, and we did an online auction. And the money went to a refugee kids' home in Hillbrow, where Zoo City is set, and it's obviously about refugees. And then with Moxieland, we got people to make, a women's group to make Moxie Monsters, and 100 rand of the 150 price tag went to the woman who made it. So it was just a really cool way to give back and to do really fun stuff, and also to let other people play in your universe, which is so exciting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing to see how people reinterpret your ideas and what an artist will do with, you know, sparking off a word. And they're not illustrating the book necessarily. They're kind of sparking off something on the page or maybe the title or whatever they want. But it's just great to see how other minds work and what elements they pick up on. It's amazing.
And also the transfer from a written medium into a visual medium as well, which I always find really quite exciting.
So exciting. You know, it's the same with cover design. When you see your cover for the first time, it's like, wow, that's absolutely incredible. And Jerry Hi-Fi and I have these sit-down meetings about my covers. And, you know, I throw out all these ideas, and he listens to me very patiently and very sweetly, and he takes notes, and then ignores everything I have to say. And goes off and comes back with the most amazing cover that is better than I could have imagined. And that is why he's the artist and I'm the writer.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that's interesting. That's fabulous stuff. I may have to steal some of those ideas for good courses.
Absolutely.
There are lots of people who would like to meet you now that you're so high profile. But I was wondering if there was anyone that you would love to meet that you're hoping to run into one day, and hopefully not whilst you're in a car, because that would be awful.
Well, you know, it would mean that they were dead and I would be able to add them to my zombie army that I'm growing in my basement, because my theory for the zombie apocalypse is get bitten fast, rise up to become queen of the zombies and take over the world.
Ah, okay. Is there someone you'd like to meet before adding them to your zombie army?
I recently got the chance to meet David Simon, who created The Wire.
Oh my God!
I know. I basically crashed an interview that he was doing with the journalist's permission. The journalist invited me to crash the interview, but he didn't tell David Simon that I was crashing the interview. So I arrived, and David Simon's like, who is this person? What is she doing here? And he completely, for the first 5 minutes, was convinced I was a stalker freak and that I was going to do something strange and that it was some kind of weird setup. I don't know what kind of setup it would be, but it took him about 5 minutes to be like, okay, you're all right. But he was amazing. He was absolutely awesome, and he regaled us with incredible stories and crazy stuff about his own personal life, and a great uncle who ran away to try and join the army and join the fight in Spain from America. And his mother actually accused him of stealing her jewelry so that he wouldn't be able to go and join Lincoln's, I think it was the Abraham Lincoln Brigade in Spain.
Oh.
And he was arrested and dragged off the ship and like in chains and shipped back to America because he was a thief who'd stolen his mother's jewelry. And he never spoke to the family again. It took David Simon a long time to kind of track down his long lost, you know, third cousin. It was the most amazing story. It was really cool. It was really fun.
That's like a novel in and of itself.
I know, it was ridiculous. He was a really lovely, cool guy, and especially cool with the fact that I just kind of rocked up and fangirled all over him.
Oh, I'm so happy when our heroes turn out to be even more marvellous than we could ever have hoped them to be.
Definitely. You know, they say you shouldn't meet your heroes, but I think if you've picked the right ones, you'll be okay.
Absolutely. I had the pleasure of meeting one of mine in July at Convergence, Melinda Snodgrass.
Oh, that's amazing.
And she's just so wonderful. And you know, her hero points went up exponentially the longer I spoke to her. So, yes, it's fantastic, as you say, when you have the right hero.
Yep.
That's very cool. My next question is actually inspired by a mug that my best friend owns that I have coveted for a long time. And on this mug, it has a lady dressed in a very beautiful 1930s style gown, and she's reclining very elegantly on this kind of shaylong. And next to it has Queen of Fucking Everything. I love that mug.
That's an awesome mug.
It's great, isn't it?
That's fucking amazing. We all need that mug.
Yeah, and I like the ambiguity as well. Is it the, you know, the Queen of Fucking Everything or the Queen of Fucking Everything?
Absolutely. Or both.
Or both, yes. one of the things I wanted to ask is that when you've taken over the world, as you seem to be well on the way to doing, I thought it was, you know, by being an extraordinarily wonderful novelist, but in fact it seems to be with zombie army plans. I was wondering what you would like your title to be.
I think that fairly straightforward, Supreme Emperor for life.
Mm.
I suppose Empress. But the Queen of Fucking Everything is fucking great. I don't know if you can top that. I might have to go with Empress of Fucking Everything.
Yes, that's the only way to go, isn't it? Yes, Empress of Fucking Everything.
Absolutely. Maybe Celestial Empress of Fucking Everything.
Yes. I understand that you've written Fairest, which is set in Bill Willingham's Fables universe.
Yeah, I met Bill at a convention. I think this is one reason new writers should always go to conventions, because you don't actually know who you're going to meet in the bar and what kind of opportunities it can lead to. Which is not to say you should go and pounce on people, as I did David Simon. But, you know, be friendly and put yourself out there. Bill came to a reading I was doing for Moxieland, and he was impressed enough to force me to go and see his editor in New York at Vertigo. And I tried to get out of it. I was like, please, I don't have anything to show her. What am I going to say? This is going to be terrible. And he absolutely insisted. He set up the meeting. He said, you will be there at this time. And she liked my stuff, and she liked my novel, and Shelley Bond, and they asked me to pitch on a Rapunzel miniseries set in the Fables universe. And they said, what would you do with Rapunzel? And I said, well, you know, Rapunzel's all about the hair. Japanese horror is all about the hair. And I figured this can't be a coincidence. They very graciously and generously tried me out on a short script, and once I proved my mettle, they let me write a 6-part arc set in the Fables universe, using some of the most amazing characters and introducing a whole lot more, because we've never really done Japanese fables before. So Bill just let me play in his world. He unleashed me in his world, and it was amazing.
That is so, so cool.
It's also just amazing to be able to work with the artist, Inaki Miranda. And again, you know, what we were talking about earlier, how other people interpret your stuff, especially visually.
Mm.
The stuff he would come up with was better than I could have imagined. You know, I'd have a rough kind of idea in my head, and I'd try and describe it in as much beautiful detail as possible to make it as easy for him to draw as possible. And he'd come back with something radically different, which was exactly what I'd intended. I just hadn't realized it. So that art of collaboration and seeing what other people bring to the process, and, you know, he would sometimes draw something that would make me rethink how I was playing that scene out, and the emotion of that scene. And, you know, it would be the tension in the character's shoulders that would make me think, oh, wait, this actually really hurts. And it was amazing to see that and to kind of play with that level of stuff. We also had fights. I have no understanding of perspective, and some of the scenes I tried to get him to draw were physically impossible. There was the armor incident where he had to redraw 3 pages because I'd said Western armor and I meant samurai armor.
Oops.
And then there was the infamous scissoring moment, which was pretty ugly. Because the way it works is you write the script gets approved, it gets sent to the artist does rough scamps and sends them back to you, and then once that's approved with the panel layout, he will do the, or she will do the full page. And Inaki sent the roughs through, and it was Rapunzel with her kitsune lover, Tomoko, who's a woman. And I emailed him, I'm like, Inaki, dude, seriously, we can't show scissoring. Come on, this is not cool. You know, like, there's so much sexism in comics and, like, so much, you know, sexualizing of women, and it's terrible, and we really need to fight back against that. And I gave him this long lecture by email, and he replied with, like, just one line saying, Lauren, that's her tail.
Oh, God.
Because she's a fox spirit, and she has 5 tails. And he had very artfully and sensually and beautifully placed the tail to hide any gratuitous sexualized detail, and I just accused him of the opposite. But it became a running joke, you know. We were like, well, is that panda scissoring Jack? You know, what exactly is going on with that crab on the building? Is it scissoring the neon sign? And it became our running joke.
I was going to ask you what it's like to write comics in comparison with novels, and the first thing that occurs to me is that it's much more exciting.
It is much more exciting, and many more scissoring jokes. I don't get anywhere near this many out of novel writing.
Because one of the things I am fascinated by with comics is the collaborative aspect, because obviously when you write a novel, there is only you, and obviously there are multiple imaginary characters bodding around, but it is just you at the end of the day, and then of course when it goes to your editor and your agent, and there are other people involved, but in terms of the creative process, it is mostly you. So is it odd having somebody else that closely involved?
No, because I've done it previously. You know, I worked on an animated TV show in South Africa for a long time, The Adventures of Pax Africa. And I worked with an amazing writing team with an incredible writer called Sarah Lotz, who has a huge novel coming out next year called The Three, and Sam Wilson, who has written the most hilarious, wonderful romp in ancient Rome heist novel.
Wow.
It's just amazing, which he's shopping around at the moment. But we all worked together as a team, and we would all kick each other's scripts over to each other. So I would write the first draft of my scripts, and then I would kick it over to them, and Sam would make it funnier, and Sarah would make it darker. And, you know, we all had strengths that we would bring out, and we would overwrite each other's work so many times. And we would also, you know, do a read-through with the animation team, and they would add jokes. And, you know, so there was always a sense of collaboration and seeing what other people brought to the process, and that was very cool.
Hmm.
And actually, when it came to writing Zoo City, my first draft tended to be very lean. So my first draft of Zoo City was about, I don't know, I think about 60,000 words. Mm-hmm. And it went to Angry Robot, and it came back, and they were like, look, you need to explain more about the world. And I was like, you know what, I hate those info dump scenes. I hate those Morpheus telling Neo exactly how the world works, or the characters are sitting in a bar, and it's like, well, what has happened? What is this strange place? And they have to explain everything. And I'm like, please, it's so painful. And I wanted to do it much more like a movie, or like our experience of the real world, where we get a lot of information simultaneously from different places. And I think Children of Men is so great because you get a lot of information from the advertisements, or a cage of refugees in the background on kind of the train station, or a newspaper clipping. And all of that feeds into your understanding of the world without having to have that painful exposition scene. So I decided to do extra materials for Zoo City, and there's an IMDb page on the first documentary on the first person who has a magical animal, because criminals get magical animals. And there's an interview with a music producer, and talking about kind of the bands that he's been working with and how he started working with musicians with animals. And I actually got some of my friends to guest write some of those chapters. And seeing what they brought to my world and the way they reinterpreted it was absolutely amazing. Sam wrote a chapter for it, The Prison Diaries, which is just absolutely beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful chapters in the whole book, and it's not even mine. And the other was Charlie Human, who's got a book out called Apocalypse Now Now, which is just this mad urban fantasy romp. It's completely insane. But he undermined my entire universe. He wrote a psychological paper, which basically undermined the major magic phenomenon in my universe and said, oh, well, it's all in these people's heads, and it's a subversion of their shadow selves, and kind of very Jungian. And it was just absolutely fantastic and amazing. And that, it was so wonderful because it subverted my world. Mm. Because the real world is like that. We don't have definitive opinions or realities, actually. You know, every reality is different, and our experience of reality is different, and there are different theories about what reality is, and different religions and different philosophies, and it was so great to have that so present in the novel. And I wouldn't have thought of that on my own. I might have thought of The Prison Diaries on my own, but I wouldn't have thought about the psychology paper, which undermined everything I'd so carefully set up. It was brilliant. So I love collaboration. I love seeing other minds, you know, and what they bring to the process. Because the magic for me in writing is the moment where you surprise yourself, where your subconscious intervenes and the character does something slightly different, or the chapter skews a way that you hadn't quite been intending.
Mm.
But, of course, it's quite hard to surprise yourself, you know, because even though it's your subconscious at play, there is, your conscious is obviously involved as well. But other minds will always surprise you, and that's really cool.
That is very cool. Well, I'm afraid that the Eccles cake is nothing but a pile of the odd raisin and crumbs now, and the teapot is empty.
I'm sorry, it's the zombies.
It's been a delight to have you here today, you know, if only to have discovered the plan of the zombie army, so I know what I have to deal with when the apocalypse comes.
Oh, wait, is this going to be public? I'm afraid the zombies are going to have to kill you. Where's that discombobulation ray?
Oh, quick, Latimer!
Is there a problem, Mum?
No problem, Latimer. We're all fine here. Everything's fine. How are you?
That's the first time you've ever asked me. I'm quite well, Mum, aside from a slight ache in my left...
Lucas is ready to go now, Latimer. Well, if you manage to leave the Nautilus safely, things don't necessarily have to become public. We can discuss that.
Oh, yes. Well, I have this treasure chest. If you'll just look at this discombobulation ray, I can tell you all about it.
But do take care, and thank you so much for dropping by.
Thank you. It's lovely.
Bye.
This way, Mum. Your diving suit is ready. All you need to do is follow the rope up to the longboat, and it will take you to shore.
We can watch Lauren's progress from the observation window.
Ah, there she is. She's taken to the suit well.
I don't know how she's managing in that huge helmet. Uh-oh, There's a swarm of jellyfish. Looks like the stinging variety. Oh, they're avoiding her.
A few jellyfish are no concern to Miss Bucus.
That manta ray may be bolder. Goodness, it's huge.
I doubt it, Mum.
Oh, that's avoiding her too. Perhaps they've heard about her zombie army. A shark!
Sharks are the least of her troubles.
Did you say something, Latimer?
I was merely commenting on the bubbles, Mum.
Oh, yes. What's causing those? It's almost like the water is vibrating around her.
You may want to steady yourself, Mum.
Why?
Because of the kraken emerging from the crevasse over there. What a magnificent beast.
It's going straight for her.
Such a shame the discombobulator ray doesn't work underwater.
The captain must have seen it. We're going up to the surface. Lauren's almost on the longboat. I don't see how that will help. The kraken's going for the oarsman.
A skinny fellow. He'll barely dent the monster's appetite.
She's taken off her helmet. I wonder what she's shouting. I can't make out the words.
Oh dear. I believe she's calling down the power of the Mieville. I've heard he has some knowledge of kraken. Am I correct in believing that, Mum? Mum?
Oh, China.
Oh, for goodness sake. And here come the book bats. At least their pages won't be able to penetrate this hull. And there are the words of binding.
So many beautiful words.
Mum?
And the layers of meaning. It's like Embassy Town all over again.
Hardly, Mum. Well, that's done then. She's bound the kraken to her will and off it goes, carrying her aloft in its tentacles. Another servant for her army. Most troubling.
Oh, I drifted off there. Sorry, Latimer, I went off to my happy place for a moment.
Miss Bucus tamed the beast with the power of the Mieville.
So now she has a zombie army and a kraken?
Indeed, Mum.
I'm a tad envious.
The kraken are renowned for two things, Mum. Their destructive force and their inability to make a decent cup of tea.
I don't feel so bad now. Would you be kind enough to tell the captain we're ready to go ashore? Well, dear guests, thank you for joining the formidable Lauren Bucus and I today. The next time we take tea together, we'll be joined by Joe Abercrombie, Lord Grimdark himself. Last time we took tea together, I asked for ideas to make the room party at the San Antonio Worldcon a memorable affair. Well, my dear Paul has come up with the solution again. He suggested I take English sweets and tea for my friends over the pond to enjoy. I've packed some toffee, fudge, and licorice all sorts. Another friend is taking care of the tea. I'm not too worried about that, to be honest. It will be wine o'clock by the time the party starts anyway. I raise my teacup to you, Paul. Thank you. I was rather excited to see a trailer for Ip Man 3 on the interwebs this week. It's put me in the mood for more martial arts films, as I'm very fond of them, and I was wondering if you have any recommendations. My favourites include the first Ip Man, The Legend of Fong Sayuk, and of course, Legend of the Drunken Master. Do be dears, and leave your recommendations at www.teaandjeopardy.com. I'll share them with you the next time we take tea. Well, until next time, my pear drops. Now, Latimer, find a new location for the secret tea lair, would you? Perhaps somewhere without a sea view.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find out more and join in.